Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, where...
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. This is your co-host, Fanny Crawford.
And Stasi Okowski.
And we're happy you've joined us today. It's Monday, September 30th, and we have a lot to talk about. Starting with thanking Andy Offit-Irwin for letting us use his original composition, Tarry Here, to open our show. Stash, you did some storytelling this weekend.
I did.
Tell us about that.
I was in LaValle, Maryland, at the LaValle Library, and there was a story swap in the morning.
You know, if you're from LaValle, you pronounce it LaValle.
Well, I'm from Baltimore, so I pronounce things just the way we did when I was a kid.
Yeah, and I usually say LaValle, too.
LaValle, sure. Okay. That's like, you know, things are different in different places. And I usually try to learn if people pronounce names differently than I think they should be. But sometimes it's really difficult. In Pittsburgh, where I lived for almost about 4.5 years, there were lots of names that they pronounced in really weird ways that names that I knew internationally, everybody said it one way.
Oh, yeah.
In Pittsburgh, they had a completely different pronunciation.
Were there Polish names?
No. These are, you know, I have to think of...
Some of them are Indian names in Pittsburgh.
One of them was a French name, straight from France, and they pronounced it in a completely different way. I didn't even know what they were talking about until somebody explained to me. So, you know. Anyway.
So in LaValle.
In LaValle, there was a story swap for the West Virginia Storytelling Guild, which was neat. The library was really nice, and it was interesting that the West Virginia Guild could have a story swap and a performance in the afternoon in a Maryland library.
Yeah.
Normally, we do it in West Virginia someplace. So that was nice.
It is a nice library, too.
It was very nice. And the librarians were very nice. And the interesting thing was the story swap was scheduled for 10 o'clock. And things like that don't have to start exactly at that time, you know, because somebody was going to make coffee and all this stuff. However, the librarians wouldn't let us in until 10 o'clock. There was no, you know, I kept walking around and I tried doors on all sides. And finally, this lovely young woman came to the door and said, "We don't open until 10. So I walked around the building a couple more times.
So nobody else was there either from your group?
Oh, no. There were some sitting in the cars.
Right, but not
they
inside.
They just knew better, I guess.
Yeah.
I wanted to get inside because I had some stuff to set up.
So you told science stories.
So I told science stories. I told about the man who invented the barometer.
Whose name is?
Evangelista Torricelli.
See, I just wanted to hear you speak Italian.
Yeah. Mi chiamo a Stanislao Ziolkowski.
Oh.
That's Italian for my name is Stanislao.
Don't you have to say Ziolkowskio?
No.
Okay. I think Never mind.
We're having far too much fun for the beginning here. We've only been talking for a couple minutes and it's got out of hand. Anyway, it was a very nice morning. Then we had lunch at a nice restaurant down the road and then came back and performed for some people from the area. And that was very nice.
How many people were in the audience?
About 12.
Oh, wow. I didn't know there was going to be an audience. That's right. Yeah. I guess I did read that.
Yeah. Okay. And so it was very nice.
I missed it.
They had a nice flyer for it up on the... library door and on the bulletin board, and my picture was on it.
Were there kids there?
No.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that at a library there would be no kids.
Well,
this time there were not.
It was good for me because I was doing science stories that I used with young people during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told them in a different way.
Yeah, for adults, absolutely.
Which was really nice. And I had some of my science equipment with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the best thing about it was early in the story swap, one of the tellers had said, she's been telling for a long time, she said that the thing that she likes best about telling is she does a lot of young people. She said, when I start a story and get to a good part, their eyes are just lit up, and sometimes there's a ooh or an ah. And when I did my science materials, they were like, oh, wow, from adults.
Yeah.
Which is great.
That is very cool.
You know, because every once in a while when I've done science and there are adults in a room, I wonder if they really believe it.
Think you're doing magic, fake magic?
During the summer, I had a woman sitting in the back, a bunch of young people, and a mother sitting in the back who was on her phone. And she wasn't
paying attention.
No, she was paying attention to me. And she wasn't calling people or texting. She was checking on what I said. afterwards, she said, everything you talked about was exactly right. I was looking up on Google, and, you know, you talked about this guy and that guy and this, and I never heard of...
She doubt you? Is that why she was checking?
I don't know.
That's disconcerting.
But she was friendly and everything. And
she found out you weren't a liar.
Yeah. She told me afterwards she had never heard the name of Tycho Brahe. And I said, I'm not surprised.
A lot not of people a household, don't know about right? That. Not a household name.
Should be. Anybody who ever studied any physics,
right,
or any science, you know, astronomy, should know him well. But she was impressed with my gold nose.
Your nose is not gold right now, no. So I had to check.
No. Anyway.
All right.
So,
would you like to talk about the Speak Story series? Stasz Zielkowski.
Yes, it's coming down to the end. October 8th, which is coming up quickly, and is going to be a squeeze because a number of storytellers are going to be in Jonesboro, Tennessee, probably about 11,000 people there, and that ends on Sunday, the 7th, and on October 8th, on Tuesday, Tim Tingle will be in Shepherdstown at Shepherd University, and he will be telling some Oklahoma Choctaw. It's a hard. Why is
you could
hard?
Say Choctaws.
I don't know if they would appreciate that. He's an Oklahoma Choctaw Indian. He's a author and a great storyteller, and he plays the native flute and a drum. And on that morning, on Tuesday, October 8th, that morning, I'm going to be taking him to Ransom Elementary School in Ransom, West Virginia, which is close to Charlestown.
Yeah, I didn't know what you were thinking about. I saw you think about that for a minute, and I was trying to figure out what you were trying to remember.
What state? Because in this area,
yeah, you can the quad be in state,
three different states,
four.
Okay, I was thinking of three different states in a very short period, like in 10
well,
miles.
Well, I include Pennsylvania.
Yeah, well, you have to drive a little bit to get to Pennsylvania.
Not from my house.
No, that's. Okay.
Like 7 minutes. True. 5 minutes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'm going to take him there. He's going to do two performances for the students, mm-hmm. young students, and then I'll be taking him to lunch. The Speak Story mm-hmm. committee always takes the storyteller to lunch, and there's usually like five or six of us with the teller. And that's always a really great time because
mm-hmm.
you get to hear things that he or she doesn't usually talk about at the evening performance. And then an evening performance that'll be gangbusters, I'm sure.
I'm looking forward.
And then November 12th, Bill Harley will be here from Massachusetts. He was a big hit last year.
And he's always a big hit.
Right. Very popular. And I tried to hire him once, but I couldn't. A long time ago.
For a festival?
But he was really tied up and stuff.
Yeah.
And he told me later it wasn't personal. That was good.
It's been a great season.
Yes.
Good lineup.
If you have any questions about this, you can go to the speakstoryseries.com and get all kind of information there on the website.
About each and every teller, plus the dates.
Right.
Okay. Okay, well, shall we tell a story?
Yes, and what's our theme for today?
Our theme today is school days.
Yeah. So.
Unless you've changed it on me.
No, that's school days. Yeah.
Okay. Shall I go first, or are you going to tell first?
How about if I tell a short story first?
Please do.
A short story. To me, school days means anything that's happened about school.
Right.
From the
first
day of kindergarten until your graduation from college or master's.
And anything that happens in or near the building.
Right. There you go. So this is a story that involves my daughter, my youngest daughter, Mara, who is a teacher, an excellent student, graduated first in her class in elementary school, in high school, and in college, which if you're in education and you have a child that does things like that, makes it easy on the pocketbook because I never had to pay a cent for college tuition, which was good. Anyway, Mara is a very serious student. She's always been a serious person. She's a lot of fun to be with, but she's very serious about whatever job she does. When she was in about the fourth grade, might have been fourth or fifth grade, I'm getting to be old enough that I don't remember all the years. I came home, I was a track coach after school, I came home, and my wife said, you better talk to Mara, she's got a problem. So I went in her room and I said, Mom says you have a problem, what's wrong? She said, oh, Daddy, I failed the test. And for Mara, this was a cataclysm. This was like a volcano on top of a hurricane and a cyclone. And I said, well, tell me about it. She said, I got a 49 on the test. And I said, oh, well. She said, look, supper's not ready yet. Let's go outside. Let's take a walk. Behind the property where we lived, and my ex-wife still lives there, was a nice path that I had kind of trimmed that led to the cat's graveyard. My daughter has always had cats, and of course you have enough cats, some of them die, they get buried by the father. And but that was a nice place to walk. It was quiet, it was back in the woods, wasn't very far from the house. And so we were walking. I said, well, tell me about this. And she said, I just have never failed anything before, and it's really, I feel terrible. I feel so dumb. So I said, well, you know, here's the brightest thing about this is, you know, I've failed at a lot of things in life. You know, I've gotten bad grades. I've made mistakes and everything. And now you don't have to worry about it anymore. You know, this is it. It's done. It's like, you know, you don't have to worry about ever breaking a glass. If you break your first glass, it's, hey, it's finished. You know, the rest of it is just practice or something. And we had a pretty good chuckle about that. And she liked that advice, you know. And so we went back to the house. We had supper and had a wonderful evening, you know. The next day, I came home. Supper time, after track practice. And my wife said, Mara wants to tell you something. And she said it real seriously. So, and Mara said, I went to her room. She said, "Oh, Dad, I still have to worry." I said, "Why?" She said, "My grade was 49 out of 50. I had the highest mark in the class, so I haven't failed anything yet."
What a great story.
I know that she's actually told that story herself, you know, but it was just wonderful. She never thought about any kind of base score or anything like that.
Of course not.
She just went by the number, and 49 was not a good number until that day. So.
What was the class?
Well, it was at elementary school. I have no idea. I don't even remember the topic.
Well, that's what I meant. Was it math?
Oh, no. It wouldn't have been math.
No. Okay.
No, my daughters did very well in math. You know why?
Why?
Because I taught them the tricks. Just like I could teach other people the tricks if they ever wanted to pay attention.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah. I made math fun for my girls.
I bet you did.
We did.
You make everything fun.
No, I tried.
I'm going to... So my one question about that story is, does Mara still find that story funny, or does she now find that story funny?
I haven't talked to her about that story for a long time, but as an adult, we talked about it.
Okay.
She thought it was cute that she misunderstood.
Right.
You know.
It's evocative of so much of a childhood.
Oh, sure.
and adulthood, I guess, too. Okay, well, I'm going to talk about the Stories in the Round series because what you were just saying with Speak, it's coming up pretty quick, and relative to how recently we had Stories in the Round in September, it's coming up fast in October as well because Davi Thomason will be here on October 21st, which is a little less than a month from when we had Jim May, and it's not the fourth Monday. It is the third Monday because of Halloween. So I want everybody to know that Dovey's coming back for her second appearance at Stories in the Round on October 21st. And I'm excited. It's going to happen. And just in case there are people listening who don't know Dovey, she is of Lakota, Apache, and Scots heritage. And she tells traditional tales from all of those three traditions, but she also tells personal stories, and I don't know that I could say which was my favorite genre from Dovey because she makes every story wonderful and unique, but I am really looking forward to seeing her. Then on November 25th, we have Mitch Capel coming, one of the two funniest men telling stories in the United States. That's my new tagline. And I hope if you don't know Mitch Capel, you will come out to hear him. And then on December 23rd is Fanny Crawford. And I think this is the first time I've told stories at Stories in the Round for 2 or 3 years. I've been in plays that other people twisted my arm and made me do with them that turned out to be just wonderful.
Yes.
Very, very fine.
You are a very fine actress.
Okay. So that's about Stories in the Round. And if you want to know location, it's 13245 Searfoss Pike, just west of the city limits of Hagerstown, Maryland. And if you want more information, well, I should tell everybody, it's $12 at the door, $10 in advance, and you can call me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638, or email me at Fanitsky, Fanitsky, at hotmail.com to find out about advance registration and advance tickets. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Stories in the Round.
Stories in the Round. Is it my turn to tell?
It is your turn.
A story? Okay. This story is just called School Days.
That's appropriate.
That's as far as I got. So you've seen the photo of Greta Thunberg, the 15-year-old Swedish climate activist, that Wonder Woman. The photo where she's testifying before Congress and she's wearing a plaid flannel shirt with her long braids and these strands of her bangs in her eyes. I love that photo. But so that photo brought back a wave of memories for me, not necessarily because of the activism of this young person. I mean, I know she's very smart. She's very studious. She knows her stuff and she's a passionate student of the environment. But what rattled my cage was the fashion statement that won me over. So I feel like a very shallow person disclosing that, but I'm going to tell you why. My mother was a radical activist in her day, but she also had an old Singer foot treadle sewing machine in the back bedroom that one of her fellow librarians had given her. Now, Mom used it for mending. She didn't go in for most homemaker trappings. She was way too busy being a full-time working mom and a social justice activist to spend much time sewing up curtains and matching comforters and things like that. And she never did teach me to use the old Singer. But when I got to Julia R. Masterman Junior High School, we seventh grade girls had home economics class with a very mature, white-haired Mrs. Bowers. Now, the seventh grade boys had shop class, but that's a whole nother story. Now, Mrs. Bowers was quite a story legend in her own right, and maybe later on I'll have time to tell you little snippets of how she got to be legendary. But she did teach me to follow a dress pattern, to cut out a dress pattern, and to follow the instructions. I learned how to make an even line of buttonholes to put in a zipper, and even how to tailor the seams and darts to make a dress fit. In ninth grade, Mrs. Bowers went way above and beyond her official responsibilities and helped me to make a white fitted waist eyelet fabric dress. Now, eyelet is that old-fashioned very light cotton fabric with tiny embroidered holes all over it, so it's supposed to be cool in the summertime. And it's very fetching in a demure Anne of Green Gables kind of way. When I got to high school, 10th grade, my mother, apparently still very impressed with my new Anne of Green Gables image, bought for me a brand new, small, very basic Singer sewing machine, brand new, that she said was for both of us to learn on. Now, I don't think my mother ever used any sewing machine much after that point, but I was all in. I was very excited and ready to charge ahead with this new sewing machine. And I remember using a pencil and paper to figure out how to get in 6 hours of sewing on a school day, on a weekday, how to spend my required time at school and after school sports and still get home in time. It involved getting up really early in the morning to get my time in. But I'm just explaining how into this I was. Now, there were ups and downs, and I did run the sewing machine needle over my hand one Saturday and couldn't get the needle out of my finger. And Mom and I had to take the bottom part of the needle post with us to the emergency room at the University of Pennsylvania Hospital, and spent most of the day there till somebody in a white coat shook her head over me and removed the stainless steel needle from my appendage and gave me another needle in my arm for tetanus. But so there were low points too. But by the end of 10th grade, I considered myself a competent novice dressmaker. And my favorite pattern was a dress that my fashion-forward friends called an empire, which is French for empire, yeah, as in Napoleonic. Mm-hmm. I called this dress pattern a Josephine. And it had a scoop neck, a high waist, puffy sleeves, and a zipper up the back. Now, I don't know if I could manage wearing one of those dresses now if I had to zipper myself in these days, because I'm not as flexible as I used to. And what I remember is stretching my arms back behind my my back to start the zipper up in the back. And then I had to get as far up as I could, which was barely halfway and then reach over my shoulder and pull up the zipper the rest of the way. And it was a contortion even when I was 15. So it was the middle part that gave me trouble. But that often gave me trouble. And I say often because I made at least a dozen different versions of that dress in my 3 years of high school. I just loved that pattern, and I did it over and over again. I had a pale blue checked gingham version, a light green gingham with white polka dots, a bright orange cotton lawn with yellow stars, a sienna brown and tan striped twill fabric, which was a little heavier and more business-oriented. There was a paisley red, yellow, and gold corduroy version, and even a navy blue wool, fully lined Josephine that I thought was very professional looking. These are all mini skirts, of course. This is 1966. So that year, 12th grade, 1966, Overbrook High School in West Philadelphia, I had some interesting friends. I was a faithful member of the folk music club in 10th grade. And by senior year, I was still hanging out with many of the kids in that crowd. One of them, Paul Van Horn, was my date for the senior prom. He was a very nice guy. He even complimented me on my floor-length Josephine prom dress that I made from dark green satin with long, narrow sleeves. They were only puffy at the shoulder on that dress. I still have that dress. It almost fits me, as long as I don't try to zip it up. Paul Van Horn later became a professional trailways driver so that he could see the world. That's a whole other story, too. But there was a new girl in school that senior year, Susie. Now, she had a different name for herself, Slash. Susie Slash was a person of interest. She wore thick black eyeliner, heavy mascara, and dark brown eyeshadow under her eyes, not over her eyes. And that gave her kind of a ghoulish look that I thought went very well with her very, very short, not quite buzz cut, porcupine pelt hair style and her enormous earrings. But we all had enormous earrings. Susie Slash's most unusual attribute was her mouth. That is what came out of her mouth. Words and concepts that I had read or heard before, but never contemplated using. And many words and concepts that I had never heard, but was made to understand in the context of Susie's stories and colorful anecdotes. Now, Susie Slash, did not have any Josephine dresses, not gingham nor corduroy, with or without puffy sleeves. Her favorite attire was her prized brown leather bomber jacket, brown fry boots, black suede skirt, and a black crew neck sweatshirt. This was before hoodies, but I do like to think she would have one now, wherever she is. Now, Susie Slash surprised me one day, asking if she could try out one of my Josephines. And I hesitated. We were about the same size, but I had to think about that before I answered. The mini skirt would look great on her, but it was hard to picture her in puffy sleeves and gingham. I said yes, anyway, because I couldn't refuse such a flattering request from someone who commanded so much respect in our fashion-conscious clique. It was springtime. So when I got home that evening, I carefully ironed, folded, and packed in tissue paper the dress that I thought she would like best. And the next morning, I met up with Slash in the third floor girls' bathroom, and she tried on my prized brown and tan striped twill Josephine. "This looks great with my bomber jacket." She was right. It did look great. And I was happy. She was happy. The rest of the school day was uneventful till next to last period when I had a chemistry lab. And I spilled something noxious on my own Josephine. I don't remember what I spilled, just that it was wet and smelly, sticky, and I needed to wash it out right away. So I tracked down Slash in her art class and got her to change back reluctantly into her own clothes. And I just had time to change clothes myself, zip up, gather my books in both arms, rush to English class, and slide into my seat just as the bell rang for the start of last period. I was a good girl, after all, at least most of the time. And I hated to do anything to bring negative attention to myself. So I was very relieved that I got there on time. And I'm arranging my books and my notebook for class. Strict, no nonsense. Use only the perfect progressive tense for the unfinished past action, as in, I have been drinking 7 and 7 since I arrived at school today. Mrs. Adams, my English teacher, came over to my desk, stared at the front of my dress, and pointed to the classroom door. I looked down, and I was mortified to discover that the scoop neck of my Josephine was hanging well below my bra, and one beige bra cup was perfectly exposed. Mrs. Adams handed me a note and sent me to the office, where, in spite of my agonized explanations about a broken zipper and repeated attempts with safety pins and the school counselor's stapler, I was sent home from school early. That was a turning point for me. I already had appropriated one of my dad's old flannel shirts, somewhat threadbare, but still perfectly serviceable for the grunge look, and a lovely deep burgundy and navy plaid shirt that was. That very night, I stitched up a prototype wraparound skirt in a nice complimentary faded denim fabric, and embarked on a whole new fashion look of used flannel shirts, buttoned up to the neck, and a wraparound skirt.
Wow.
That was my cleavage story.
Your cleavage story.
Yeah, you remember.
You didn't even mention
I didn't even use the word, and you had already forgotten that I said I was going to have a cleavage story.
Well, I was waiting. I thought it was the next one.
Okay, I will insert the word cleavage in that story.
I was having a hard time imagining that vision.
The cleavage vision?
No, the way you described it, the scoop was below your bra line, and you were exposed on one side.
Yeah.
I was wondering, how could you not know that?
Because I was flustered and rushing around. Yeah. I still have high school locker and hallway dreams where I know I have to get to math. It's always math class that I have to get to. Oh. And I haven't done my homework, and I can't remember where the classroom is. Yeah. And I'm wandering around the school. And it's not always my school. Sometimes it's a school I've never been in.
I've had school dreams where I'm hustling to get to a classroom. I get to the classroom, which I know is my classroom, but there are no chemistry students there, and there's nothing about chemistry, and it's an American history class.
But you're the teacher in those dreams?
I'm the teacher.
I am never the teacher in my anxiety classroom dreams.
I haven't dreamed about being a student for a long time.
Oh, I still do.
Yeah. I had almost as many, I did, years in it. As a teacher
that's true,
40 years as a teacher
and your own share of traumas.
Yes. Lots of fun as a teacher, and would still be doing it if there was a decent mindset about public education. There's lots of crazy things going on in the public school system.
There's lots of crazy things going
in
on a
schools,
lot of face places
schools, yeah. You know. So shall I tell another story?
Oh, you should. Okay. Yes.
Well, I've been thinking lately about the, there are people who are now in trouble. One well-known actress who is going to be going to jail for 14 days, and another one who may be going to jail for as much as 4 to 6 months. Because they paid someone, in the first case, she paid someone to fix her daughter's grades or scores on the SAT because her daughter was not good at mathematics. And so she paid someone a good bit of money to fix the scores. A person who would do that is obviously not a nice person, and that person has gotten in a lot of trouble and is facing possible longer jail terms. And this is with college. And the other person just paid to get her daughters into school. And the way they did it was they said that the daughter was an athlete. I think a water polo player. And the girl had never even seen a water polo game or anything about it. And the coach, in another case, was a soccer player. And a coach with a good reputation as a soccer coach has been fired and is facing possible jail because he cooperated with this scheme. And it's centered around one main man who was kind of the the mastermind about it. And I was thinking about people just don't stop and think sometimes. These rich people paying a lot of money, in one case was $500,000, and to get their child in school because they wanted the child to be in the right school so that they could get auditions, and in this case, and be in theatrical productions, maybe in the movies or on Broadway, stuff like that. And it just seems so bizarre to me. And, you know, to have someone do that, to pay that much money, when really it's a personal thing with me. I used to talk again to the parents, and when I was teaching, I would say, don't take your child on a trip to look at colleges. Why are you going to do that? They would say, oh, they want to see what's the buildings like and what's the grounds like. And I said, why are they going to go to college? Are they going to be staring at buildings? Are they going to walk the grounds, cut the grass? Find a college by reputation that has, you know, good, solid standards, got a decent library, the rooms are nice, decent, livable, and that's it. You don't need one with a big stadium. You don't need one with all the folderol. However, nowadays, I keep reading stuff about how parents spend 3 or 4 weeks going to colleges with the student, and I experienced it myself, not with my daughters, because they went where they wanted to go without a college visit. And anyway, so I've been thinking about this a lot, and just recently I was reflecting on how I got into college. I never took an entrance exam. I never applied, actually. You know, I never wrote out a letter or anything like that. I came out of the Army in middle of July, I guess, almost to the end of July in 1962. And I had planned on applying to go to a college in New Mexico where one of my best friends from the neighborhood was going to be a senior. But my mom had passed away, and I didn't want to move across the country, away from my father. I'd been in the Army for 3 years, so I'd want to stay close. My mother's brother, Uncle Joe, Father Joe, a Catholic priest, he knew that I wanted to play soccer, and so he said, he came to the house, talked to my dad, and said, I know a place where we might be able to get him in, and they have a soccer team, and it's a good school. So he took me to Mount St. Mary's in Emmitsburg, Maryland, which was just maybe 2 hours from Baltimore, maybe not even. Now it wouldn't be that because the roads are much better, but this was 50-some years ago. So we went, and he took me there, and we walked around the campus. It's a beautiful campus, a very small population, 725 male students, no females. And they also had a seminary on the property, which is still there. It's a very old seminary, place where people become priests, study to become priests. So we went to the office and talked to the man by the name of Mr. Baker, who was the was in charge of admissions things, and talked to him, and he said, "We don't have any room. The classes are full, and where the dorms are full, and we're a small school, and we don't, you know." And my uncle happened to have gone to seminary with the current president of the college, and he said, "You think it's possible I could see the president? We went to seminary together, and I'd just like say hi since I'm, you know, here." And he said, "Fine." Well, when we were going up to the school, my uncle picked me up at my home in Baltimore, and he told me, "I want you to put your uniform on." I was still technically in the Army because I had finished 3 years of active duty, but I was now assigned to a unit in Pennsylvania for 3 years of inactive duty. But in case of something, I would be called back. So I put on my uniform and had, you know, my hair cut short and all that stuff. That's a good GI in those days. And so anyway, Mr. Baker arranged it so we could go across the hall to the president's office, and we walked in. I stood there while Uncle Joe and the president were, you know, farewell. I mean, what do you guess? Hail, met,
and
hearty, something yes, like that. Somewhere. Yeah. Anyway, we're about the good old days. And so finally the president said, "So what are you doing here today?" And Uncle Joe introduced me. And he was really good at this. He told him this sob story, which was true, that my mother had passed away, and I had not gotten home until the day after she died, and the president was practically in tears. And anyway, he said he would like to go to school here. He's a good soccer player, and thought that would fit in nicely, but. The guy in the office said they don't have room. And the president just, said to me, "Do you want to go to school here?" I said, "I would like to, but they said there's no room." And he said, "Are you a good boy?" I said, "I think so." And he said, "If I can put you in school here, will you behave yourself?" I said, "Sure." And he said, "Okay." He picked up the phone and he called Mr. Baker in the office and had him come over. He said to Mr. Baker, "I want you to enroll this boy in school for the beginning semester." And Mr. Baker said, "We don't have room for him. There are no dorm rooms." And my uncle, who was never lost for words and answers, said, "Don't worry about that. I'll find him a place to live close by." And so Mr. Baker then looked at me and said, "Well, what are you going to study?" And I know you've heard this part before.
This is my favorite part of the story.
I said, "Well, what's the hardest course?" And he said, "Chemistry major and math minor." And I said, "Well, then sign me up for that. If I can't get through the hardest stuff here, then my father and I will be wasting our money." And so I was signed up for chemistry and math, which was a good thing because it turned out that I loved chemistry. Became a chemistry teacher for 40 years. And so we left there. I was enrolled in school. I didn't have a transcript with me or anything. I told him the name of my high school, and Mr. Baker was so flustered that he had been kind of put on the spot.
Yeah, one-upped.
And he said, "I'll contact your school and get your transcripts and all that stuff." But it was great. So then my uncle took me to Father Tomalski, Harry Tomalski, who had a little church, St. Anthony's Church, just about a quarter of a mile down a back road at the edge of the campus. And I met Father Tomalski, and my uncle was telling him all about me. "I'm going to go to school there and everything." And then he sprung it on him and said, "But he doesn't have any place he can live. I thought maybe you could put him up." And, well, and With that, Uncle Joe excused himself. He was going to go to the restroom. And I never forget the look on Father Tomalski's face. He said, "When are you still in service?" I said, "Well, you know, I'm finished active duty." But, and he said, "Do you really want to live with a priest?" I said, "No, Father. I've been in the Army for 3 years. That's the furthest thing from my mind." I, you know, and he said, "Don't worry." Walked over, picked up the phone, and called Mr. Roddy, the house directly across from the church on this country road, and talked to him for a few minutes, and he said, "I've got your room. It'll cost you $1 a day." So I lived with Mr. and Mrs. Roddy. She was 79. He was 92. It was his second marriage. His first wife had died, and I found out while I lived there for a year that when his first wife died and he decided to remarry, he built a brand new home in a different on a different road because he said, he told me, no woman should move into a home where another woman has been the queen or something like that, you know, which I thought that was really kind of cool. So it cost me $1 a day, and my Uncle Joe paid for it. He paid the first year's rent, which was really good. And Mr. and Mrs. Roddy were the closest thing I ever had to grandparents. They treated me just wonderfully. And I only lived there with them for a year because I was studying seriously. I played soccer, so sometimes it was late practices. And I ate on campus, but I missed being around other students, you know, like in dorms and stuff like that. So at the end of my freshman year, I actually turned that room over to another guy, and a guy I knew on the campus who was looking to get off campus because he didn't like being around the other. So I got into college because of, I forget the word, my legacy. That's it. I read that, and then I found out that that's what it's called, some kind of pull with the college. And I think that was okay in my case because there was no money exchanged, no bribery and all that stuff. But I was very fortunate that my uncle was so good at that kind of stuff. He had done he had built a couple of schools during his career as a priest, and each time he built a new school, the diocese found a way to move him to a place that needed a new school. And he was very good at raising money, very good at that stuff.
Well, one of my favorite parts of the story is when the president of the college, and was he a priest?
Oh, yeah.
He had been to seminary with your uncle.
He really had, and so had Father Harry. They were three buddies in seminary, and, you know.
So when he says, "Are you a good boy?"
Yes.
It's very hard for me to imagine anybody asking a candidate for admission to Mount St. Mary's or any place else that question in all seriousness. And did you find that question odd?
No.
Not at all. If it hadn't been your Uncle Joe, Father Joe, who had taken you there, would you have found it odd?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I spent, I told you my mom passed away the month before that, the day before I came home. And unfortunately, my mother worked very hard for me to be a good boy. And I don't think my mother ever got to the point in her life where she thought I truly was a good boy. But I was. I worked hard at it. I wasn't, a thug or anything like that.
Well, there's a large gap between thug and good boy.
Right.
And times have changed.
I was a good boy. I really, I thought of myself as a good boy, a good mm-hmm. person. You know, I didn't do anything terrible. I didn't steal or cheat or stuff like that.
But you had been in the Army for 3 years. That's the part that is the disconnect for me. It wouldn't have been so out of so weird if you had just come out of high school. It would still be odd to me, but it would be not a surprise.
Yeah.
But to ask someone in uniform who he knew had just come out of the army, was about to come out of the army.
Yeah, well, it was peacetime. Actually, it was near, it was, there were Americans in Vietnam as advisors.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
I had actually volunteered, and sorry, myself and a buddy went and volunteered because there was a, they were going to pay $55 extra a month. Mm. There was a post, you know, and and at the time, I think the most I made in the army, seriously, I think my highest salary was $147 a month. And, you know, so another 55, anyway, the sergeant we went to talk to about, the two of us together, two buddies, you know, he said, get out of here. He said, where'd you get that information? I said, we read it on a poster. He said, did you read the whole poster? I said, and I said, I think we stopped after we saw $55 a month extra duty pay. And he said, well, you have to be over 21. And you have to be an E5. That's a sergeant.
Oh.
And you have to, and you have to reenlist
for 3 years.
For three more years, you know, as a minimum. And so we kind of ran out of the office.
And have you been back to St. Anthony's? I mean, like recently, have you been there to see what it looks like now?
About a year ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a very small parish. It's where I was married first time.
Oh, okay. And it's, is it still a functional parish that's not in danger of being closed?
I don't know that for sure, but I think so. It's a country church.
Yeah, I think I've been by there. I've certainly been on St. Anthony Road. Mm. But
there is a church in Emmitsburg that's that's functioning, and also was in the newspapers for a while. Big, big, big scandal. About the Blessed Mother being showing up to a husband.
I think I heard that story.
Yeah, nice scam.
Wow.
And they had people going for a while. You know, the woman claimed she could see the Blessed Mother.
And that's another conversation.
I know. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so, well, this was fun.
I think so.
I have heard that story more than once, and yet I'm still totally enthralled every time I hear it.
Oh, good.
It's such a good life transition story and a mentor story where, you know, people, you take your mentors where you find them, and you appreciate they believe in you, even if it doesn't last forever.
Made an incredible difference in my life.
First
person in my family, in all of my family, to go to college, and first person to become a teacher, which made my father incredibly proud. My father bragged about me being a teacher to every place he could, in the Democratic Club that he helped to start, and his local tavern, which he frequented sometimes with his friends, and that was nice. That was a really good thing.
And you weren't just a teacher; you were a really good teacher. Well. And I'm sure your dad knew that.
The one time my dad was a little bit, I think he was a little bit annoyed with education, was when I was getting my master's degree.
Mm.
I told him the date and the time and everything. He said, and I went to Baltimore and visited him to tell him that, you know, I lived outside. And he said, oh, that's nice. You know, I said, are you going to come? And he said, you want me to come to that one too? I was at college graduation. I said, Dad, I would like it, really like you to be there. I've worked very hard for this, you know. He's like, okay. You know, and so he did. He dressed, you know, got all, you know, he was a construction worker. He always dressed nicely when he went any place. There were college teammates. I played soccer. There, some of my teammates refused to believe my father worked construction because he would come sometimes to a soccer game on Saturday dressed in a suit and stand on the sidelines and watch the game. And sometimes he would take a couple of us out to dinner afterwards. And he spoke well, you know. He didn't sound like some kind of low life in it. And they just did not believe me. They always would say, we're going to find out what he really does. You know, they only went to third grade. But I was very proud of him.
Yeah. Wish I had met him.
Yeah. you would have been real young.
Yeah, but it would have been fun anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, my dad would like to.
Let's hope so. Now, maybe not after that story I just told. Okay, so are you ready to take us out?
Yes.
To finish up? Do we have any last words?
That sounds funny. Take us out.
Take you out.
Okay. Well, I don't know any last words for the other than, you know.
We could talk about, you could talk about the Guild in October.
Right. I was going to do that for our next week.
Okay, well.
Because that's coming up.
Okay, well, right. We still have 1 minute.
Okay, in a minute.
Yeah.
In October.
Yes.
October 19th, Adam Booth is performing at the Flying Camel.
In Hagerstown, Maryland.
In Hagerstown, Maryland, 28 South Potomac Street.
Very good.
Yes, how about that? And there is a public parking lot right next to the building. And, in fact, you can leave the parking lot and go into the building and get out the same way. So. And on the 20th, which is a Sunday, there will be a two-hour program put on by the Antietam Storytelling Guild from 2 to 4.
And there'll be lots of wonderful tellers there, too.
Yes, there will. And two of them will be Fanny Crawford and me.
So, but lots of other really good storytellers.
All right, so this is Stas Jilkowski and
Fanny Crawford,
your co-host for the Noontime Enlightened Radio. Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. Independent Community Radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. Closing out this week's show. Our Storytelling Hour. We say the same thing every week.
And?
I think we should change this ending.
Okay, go ahead, change the ending.
Okay. Tell your stories. Listen to stories. Ask your grandparents and your parents for stories. And kids, if anybody that's a child is listening to this or hears this, you should tell stories too.
Very good.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Coming up is...
George Strait.
George Strait. And that's the truth.